Parshas Vayera. And the Rebbe Shaver has very interesting analysis of the Haftarah, and a very known popular Haftarah, and it's connected to Hanukkah. So even though we're in Parshas, this week is Parshas Vayigash, nevertheless, we'll turn to the Haftarah and Parshas Vayera. Now in the Stone Edition,
which page?
It's let's see where we are in Stone Edition. Haftarah LaParshas Vayera. Here we go. Yeah, in the back, page 1134. What's the story? Let's read the story. A certain woman from among the wives of the disciples of the prophets cried out to Elisha, saying, "Your servant, my husband, has died, and you know that your servant was God-fearing. Now that the creditor has come to take my two sons to be his slaves." Elisha said to her, "What can I do for you? Tell me, what do you have in your house?" She answered, "Your maidservant has nothing in the house except for a cruse of oil." 11:34. He said, "Go borrow vessels for yourself from the outside, from all your neighbors, empty vessels. Do not be sparing. Then go in and shut the door behind you and behind your children. Pour into all these vessels and remove each full one." She left him and shut the door behind her and behind her children. They brought her vessels and she poured. When all the vessels were full, she said to her son, "Bring me another vessel." "There is not another vessel." And the oil stopped. She came and told the man of God and said, "God, go sell." And he said, "Go sell the oil and pay your creditors, and you and your sons will live on the remainder." That's it. Atkan. Now this woman, as Rashi says, and the Midrashim say, this was Ashes Oivadio. Oivadio was a Novi, and he passed away. He was a ger. He passed away, and what was the issue? Why were the creditors? Because Oivadio borrowed a lot of money from Yehoram ben Achav, who was a Yisrael mummer, because that's going to be relevant to our story, an apostate. Is that a mummer?
Yeah.
Okay. Is that correct definition?
Yeah.
Mummer? Okay. Yisrael mummer, I'll just use the Hebrew terms as we go, onwards. Yisrael Mumer, I'll call upon him, and he borrowed money from him, a lot of money, because he supported Oivadia, needed food to support, he fed 100 Nevi'im in secret, and he needed a lot of funds, and where did he get it? So he borrowed it from Yehoram, and it so happened to be that Yehoram charged him interest. He didn't stop lending money. And in other words, when he took the loan out, like one of some of the Mefarshim say, could be some safer, that definitely when he borrowed the money, he secured himself to pay the loan, but it was on interest, and that, the interest killed him. He didn't die for that, but it just stopped. Therefore, so the creditors came, Nebuchadnezzar passed away, and the creditors come and claiming the money, the interest, the money, the Karen and the Ribis. Anyway, he wants to take her two sons to be her slaves, to be his slaves. What do you do? So Elisha is the prophet, and Elisha gives her advice and tells her what to do. She has nothing. She has a little canister of oil. She has no possessions to her name, because as the Mefarshim say, many Mefarshim have explained that the creditors may have had right. If she had any possessions, the Chassam Sofer talks about it, the Meshech Chochma discusses it, etc., etc., in the Haftarah on Parshas Re'eh, Vayera. The fact is, she ends up with nothing. She has nothing good. He tells her what to do. She ends up having an abundance of oil via an Nes, right? And thanks to the Nes, she has enough to sell the oil, and with that, she has money to pay back the creditors. And Baruch Hashem, she has her sons, and they're safe. Now this parsha is quoted in the Taz in Hilchas Chanukah. Not the whole parsha, but just the principle.
A bracha on oil shel nes.
Yeah. Good evening. So for you, it may be about a bit of a review, but nevertheless, I hope you'll appreciate it.
Sure.
Okay. And for you too. For Rabbi Talashevsky. Okay. And F. Shefarai. Okay. The Riker. So the Taz, the known Taz, the first Taz in Hilchas Chanukah is Simen Tov Resh Ayin. The Taz, the known, he quotes the question. The Shulchan Aruch says where we have 8 days Chanukah, and he quotes the question of the Beis Yosef. The Beis Yosef asks, why do we celebrate 8 days Chanukah? The Gemara says clearly that there was sufficient oil for 1 day, so we should celebrate only 7 days. Why do we celebrate 8? The miracle was only needed for 7 days. And the Beis Yosef has 3 answers, and the Taz is not satisfied with the answers, because he says those answers should have been explicitly explained by the Rabbonim, by the Chachomim, etc. Therefore, he says, I have an answer, which this answer is the most obvious answer, and therefore there's no need for the Mepharshim to highlight it and explain it or analyze it, because it's obvious. It doesn't work any other way, because this is the formula. What's the formula? So he brings a Zohar. The Zohar quotes, based on the Pasuk of Eishes Oivadya, with Elisha, the story with the Osach Shemen. We see from the story of the Osach Shemen that when Elisha wants to make this miracle, right, and have her have an abundance of oil, he didn't just make hocus pocus, right, and make a miracle, even though it was bepashtus be, I don't know, may have been mistame, it was be to do it, whatever. I'll call upon him, whatever the case is. He asks her first, what do you have? Do you have anything? And she says, yeah, I have some oil. And some say it's merely a smear of oil. That's why it's called osach shemen. Miloshes sichas shemen. She had barely like a drops of oil. So only due to the fact, says the Zohar, what do we see from the story? That only because, due to the fact that she had some substance, some materialistic, physical substance of oil. So therefore, upon that, Hashem's blessing is bestowed. And therefore, from that can become an abundance of oil. And that's why there was a bracha in the oil. That from this small amount of oil, there was what? There was the flow of oil. As Rashi says, and the Mepharshim say, that it worked as a mayon, as a well, as a spring, that all the oil flowed from this asach shemen, which she had, from this canister, from this cruise of oil she had. So says the Taz, we see from this that the only possible way that a brocha should be able to be bestowed, and Hashem should bestow his blessings, is only if there's some physical matter, if there's some physical something there if in the physical, and Hashem bestows his blessing on the physical. B'meila, therefore, what occurs is as follows. Naturally, all the oil of the first, so true, let it be that there was sufficient amount of oil the first night, but naturally, what should have been, all the oils which was assigned for the first night should have been totally consumed naturally, right? And if it would have been totally consumed, it would be impossible to have a miracle on the second night. Because Hashem only bestows His blessing via the miracle, only if there's something, a physical substance there to have the blessing bestowed upon. B'meila, if we see that a miracle did occur the second night, we must say that a miracle occurred the first night. What's the miracle the first night? That it wasn't totally consumed, even though naturally it should have been totally consumed. Hashem made a miracle the first night that some of the oil should remain. That was the miracle. And b'meila, therefore, upon that, there could be an additional miracle the second night for Hashem's blessing to be bestowed upon. Now, this is there's a major controversy, b'chalal, in this Taz, and I don't understand the Taz, because there's the well-known question of the Chidushi Horim, quoted in the Klechem, the Parshas Vayakel, and also other Meforshim, as Rav Shlomo Kluger in the Sefer HaChayim, on Shulchan Aruch, Hilchos Chanukah, and other Achronim thereafter. Now, the Chidush HaRim asks a simple question. He says, isn't it b'koicho v'yicholte v'akodesh Baruch Hu to make a nes yesh me'ayin? Hashem created the world, yesh me'ayin, right? From nothing there's a world. So b'meila, definitely Hashem can make nisim yesh me'ayin, right? So true, let it be, it's self-understood that Hashem doesn't make miracles in vain, like it says in Drosh HaSoran, etc. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Oysen Nisim L'Magona, Right? Hashem doesn't make miracles in vain, but when there's a need for a miracle, so therefore, why shouldn't it be? It's definitely because to do, to make miracles, even though, so it doesn't have to be in a manner of yesh miyesh, that there's some substance has to remain, even if there's no substance, Hashem can make a nes yesh miyayin. And there are interesting two approaches to analyze this task. One approach is the approach of the Chidushi Horim, and that is as follows, which we're not going to deal so much with tonight, possibly, but we'll go on basically with what the Rav Shlomo Kluger says. And he says as follows, the Chidushi Horim says, the halacha is that to light the menorah you need, like it says in the Chumash, Shemen Zayis Zoch, Kos Islamar, you need olive oil. You cannot use miracle oil. You need olive oil. The Mele says he, says the Chidushi Arim, I now appreciate and understand the Taz, because the Taz had to learn that some physical substance remained, and upon that Hashem's blessing was bestowed. And how then, how do we judge the oil? That the physical oil becomes bountiful, becomes flourishes, so to speak. So then it is regarded as Shemen Zayis. First we have a bit. Hashem blesses the bit which is there, the physical Shemen Zayis, and it becomes an abundance of it. So then it's still regarded as Shemen Zayis. But if there would be no oils left the first night, and it would be Yesh Me'ayin, so that would be purely miracle oil. And that would be unfit to use for the menorah, which we need Shemen Zayis for. It's Shemenes, not Shemen Zayis. That's the pshat of the Chidush Harim in the task, quoted in the Klechem, the Parshas Vayakel. And he goes on and has a lengthy exposition on this, which, if time allows, we'll discuss it, either yes or not. Now, that's his take on it. Rav Shlomo Kluger says, the Taz says what he said. He asks the same Shaila. What do we need? That the brocha, should be something left. Definitely there could be a nest, etc., etc. And he says that we have a different problem. The problem is as follows. There is a halacha that you're not allowed to derive benefit or appreciate ma'ase nisim. Osur lehonos mima'ase nisim. If Hashem makes miracles, it is prohibitive to appreciate and derive benefit from the miracle which Hashem has made. One has to refrain from it. Why? So Rashi says in the Sichta Tainis Daf Chav Dalet, because if you do appreciate and use and utilize the miracles for your personal needs, and you're an individual, now many ways and forms and fashions when it's allowed, as we will discuss soon. But why? So Rashi says, because Minakin lo mischiyosov, Hashem will subtract from the person's schuyot, from his merits. If Hashem has to make special miracles for the individual, so then you get all at once, and God forbid if you need it for whenever, so it's not going to remain. So therefore, no more credit. So therefore, Rashi says, Osur lehonos mimaisa nisim. Rashi says so in Besichta, but Tain is Daf Chob Dalet. I haven't seen it quoted in the Poskim, but Rashi says so, and also, nevertheless, Rashi says in the Tain is Chob Dalet Omid Beis that it's just preferable not to be Nenim mimaisa nisim. And the Achronim, the Meforshim on the spot, the Mitzpah Eson, the Yadovid, the Yavitz, and many others explain that the different Gedorim and forms and fashions of miracles, as we will soon discuss. So the Rabbi Shlomo Kluger and Sefer HaChaim says, due to the fact that one is not allowed to be nen and mimaisa nisim, in other words, this relates to privates, individuals, commoners, right? Not in the Beis HaMikdash in general. The same applies for the Beis HaMikdash. Why does it apply for the Beis HaMikdash? Because the halachim is in many places in Shas. For instance, Mesichta Menachos Daf Vav says the Gemara based on a pasuk in Yecheskel, chapter 4, Mem Hei, for a human being, for a yid to consume, because it's treif, because it has a hole in its heart and its lung, whatever, right? And it makes it unfit. You can't shecht it. You can't eat it anyway, right? Can you use it as a korban? Says the Gemara, definitely not. Says the Gemara, because it says mimashki Yisrael, and from that the Gemara says, what does it mean? Min hamuter li Yisrael. In other words, whatever is allowed for a yid, for a commoner, out of the Beis HaMikdash, that's what you're allowed to use as a korban in the Beis HaMikdash. From there we derive from the pasuk Mimashki Yisrael, that any korban on the Mizbeach, or libations, Nesachim, Niskeyai, which a yid can't drink, or can't have any, or can't eat, consume. So that's what we use to Mimashki Yisrael, because Rashi says in Yecheskel, because the machol, the main suda of a person is the food, or Oichel oy mashke. So that's what the pasuk uses. Be mashke Yisrael. So in other words, anything which is consumed on the mizbeach has to be suitable for a commoner to eat himself, right? And if it's unfit, therefore it's unfit for the mizbeach. B'meila says this is Rav Shlomo Kluger, due to the fact that an individual cannot derive benefit from nisim, is therefore the same applies for the Beis Hamikdash. Also lehonos b'maisa nisim. The Beis Hamikdash cannot use miracle stuff or matter which is come about via a miracle, because it's not it has a chesaron of mimashke Yisroel. It's not suitable for a yid out of the Beis Hamikdash. It was therefore not suitable for the Beis Hamikdash. B'meila therefore says Rav Shlomo Kluger. Therefore the oil had to come about in the case of the Taz, where the Taz quotes that Hashem had to bestow His blessing on the substance which was there, and he says, if Hashem would have made a miracle, Yeshme Ayin, upon that we say, Osu Lehonos B'Maisenisi. In other words, when is there a prohibition to benefit from a miracle? Is only when it is Yeshme Ayin, when there's Hashem makes hocus pocus, there's nothing. Then all of a sudden something becomes. So such matter, you're not allowed to derive benefit from. But if it is in a manner where there's a physical substance, and the physical substance just becomes an abundant, Hashem places, bestows His blessing, and it becomes, there's an abundance of it, so then the prohibition doesn't apply. And if that's the case, therefore the miracle of Hanukkah had to happen in such a manner in order for them to enable the Yidden and the Beis HaMikdash to be able to use that oil, in order it shouldn't lack the problem of Mimashka Yisroel. Now that's his take on it. So we see there are two ways of approaching either the problem of Shemen Zayis or Shemen Nes or the problem of Mimashki Yisrael. Now just by the way, the issue of Mimashki Yisrael, this halacha, is what the Sefer HaChaim is saying seems to be quite novel, because the halacha we've introduced of Mimashki Yisrael, the way it is in the Shas, in an obvious fashion, is relating to korbonos on the Mizbeach and libations on the Mizbeach. He draws parallels. He says the same applies for the Shemen and the Menorah. And the question is, does it also apply to the Menorah? It may just apply to the Mizbech and not to the Menorah. And this is queried by Rabbi Menachem Zembe. He quoted in the Sefer Gur Aryeh Yehuda from Rabbi Menachem Zembe's son. He quotes his father there. And also in the Sefer Zera Avram, which is Shailos HaTshuvos between Rabbi Menachem Zembe and the son-in-law of Rabbi Meir Simcha of Dvinsk. There is a Sameach where the son-in-law of Rav Meir Simcha quotes Rav Meir Simcha, who says that there is a problem of Mimashki Yisrael in the menorah of the Beis HaMikdash, and so also concludes the son of Rav Nachum Zembe that there is that problem, even though it's not the menorah is not regarded as Achilas Mizbeach, it's not regarded as, it's only called like Shreifas Shemen, it's called, it's regarded and described in the Poskim, not Achila. Nevertheless, it has to have qualifications of Mimashki Yisrael, just like it is in the Mizbeach. Okay, this is just in passing. So we're just going back to what Rav Shlomo Kluger says. So he seems to claim that there is we can remove the problem of Osur Lehonos Mimasa Nisi, to derive benefit from miracles. That problem will be removed if it is in a manner of bracha, that the blessing is bestowed upon some physical matter. And that's why the miracle occurred in this way. Okay. Now, I believe, we'll come to analyze what the Rogatchover says in the Parsha, in this case of the after of Parshas Vayera with the Osach Shomen of Eshes Oivadia, and either we will say that the Rogatchover has a different take on it, or possibly because the Rogatchover explains the case of Eshes Oivadia differently, therefore he held it was a problem. And here we go. The Rogatchover says, and he highlights different points in the story. And I think it would be preferable, appreciated, if we highlight them now. Firstly, he asks the Rogatchover, why was there a need? I mean, if we're making miracles, right? Why was there a need to borrow these kelim? I mean, of course, we're trying to have as many vessels as possible to fill them, right? Okay, so that's the practical reason, okay? But we're looking for a halachic take on it, right? In other words, the Rogatchover is bothered. Why was there? What do we attain? What do we gain halachically by borrowing these kelim? And we will see as we go. We're borrowing kelim, all right? And because we are borrowing these kelim, Therefore, we will have what again? And then we go on to say, you want to say something?
Oil would have belonged to the creditors if it had been her.
Okay. Okay, fine. That is the, you know whose pshat that is. That pshat is Rav Meir Simcha's pshat and Meshech Chochma. And that's why the Meshech Chochma says, it says, Ma yesh lichi babayis. And he says, lichi can be read loch or li. And he basically says to her, borrow it. In other words, borrow and you should know it should be li. Sell it to me. So it's mine, not yours. Okay. That's take a look at the Meshech Chochma. You'll see that's the way he touches.
He has a lot. He asked, he told her to get the cash because he wanted them exactly what Rabbi, that many people should be part of the Tehillah, that everybody should be involved in it.
That sounds okay. Yeah, okay. Beseder. So there are many ways of looking at it. Okay. Let's go on. Then he says to her, he has to advise her, he says, V'yotzakta al kol ha-kelim ho'ele v'hamol le'tasi'i, right? I mean, basically, this is an obvious thing. He says to her, once one of the vessels are filled, move away the filled vessel and replace it with an empty one. Does Elisha have to tell her that? Isn't that obvious? That he has to move aside the full one and then place an empty one? Now, not in vain, Rashi basically says that he wasn't really out to say to her that you should push aside the full one. That's obvious, right? He basically meant to say push aside the full one and don't push aside the cruse of oil you had. That don't touch. Rashi says that remains put because that serves as the spring, as the source for the oil, and the mayon shouldn't be budged or moved. That remains set, and everything else you can move around. So that's what he meant to say. Bahamolitasi, move all the rest, but don't move the source. Okay. That's what Rashi says. Okay, but the Rogachev has definitely a different take on it, as we will soon see. Then as we go on, we see he says to her at the end, she asks what to do with it. He tells her what to do with it, and he says, you know, va'at uvonayich tichye banoisar, right? And you can keep the rest. I mean, doesn't he have to tell her that? I think it's quite obvious, right? That you can keep the rest and use the rest. Okay, you can say all the different pshatim you like. We'll soon see what the Rogachev says. Now, something very novel, something unbelievable, but only the Rogachover can do it. Now, the Rogachover says as follows, and therefore he's going to have to say what he says. There are two major issues there. One major, and that's really the major problem. What's the story? The story is, we mentioned that Yehoram, when he lent the money to Ovadia, he charged him interest. He wasn't allowed. He's a Yisrael Mumun. It wasn't allowed. Now, if Yehoram wasn't allowed to charge interest, for the same reason, Ovadia was prohibited to borrow an interest. Right? Okay, these are halachas, that the loive and the malva have the same problem, the same prohibitions. Loisashich, etc., all the halachas. So what right did Ovadia have to borrow an interest? So Tosfos says the Rogachover. Tosfos says in Misichta Avodazor Daf Chavav Amud Beis, that the situation was pikuach nefoshes. He poshet, there were 100 prophets who were starving, and they had nothing to eat. There was no other way to serve, to feed them, only by borrowing this money and obtaining food and feeding them. So therefore, it says, Tosfos, it was a mitzvah, there's no choice. It was pikuach nefoshes, it was a dangerous situation, there was no other choice, therefore we had to borrow an interest. That gave Ovadia right to borrow an interest, okay? But that only gives Ovadia right to borrow an interest, correct? Now, the creditors are coming, right? The creditors are coming and they want everything. They want the keren and the ribis. They also want everything, the whole loan, to be repaid. And they want also the interest to be repaid. Now, to repay the interest is already not pikuach nefoshes. What kind of pikuach nefoshes are there? You're taking the sons of slaves? Okay, there are ways of getting out of it, but you're not allowed to repay interest. And if you're not allowed to repay interest, so what? How does? That's exactly the whole issue here. When the Eishes Avadia says, how do I... She was... Her aims and goals were to reprieve, to keep her kids, that her kids shouldn't be taken as slaves is to the, by the creditors. But, okay, so we have to remove the, get the creditors out of the way. We have to pay back the debt. That's the only way. But to pay back the debt, you have to pay back the interest. What do you have? You pay back interest to a yid. You're not allowed. It's a psak halach. You're not allowed. By the way, it's a halach in Hilchos Rivis. You're not allowed. You can't pay Yisrael Mumer. You're over on two lavin. You're over on Lefnei Velo Yisit Mirshal. Because you're not allowed to place a stumbling block. In other words, just like the Jew apostate, a Jew who's an apostate is not allowed to perform, do, lend, or borrow money on ribis. So therefore, by paying him back ribis, you're allowing him, giving this allowance to take the ribis from you. And you're also even like Sashich, says Toysvis, two lavin. It's quoted in Shulchan Aruch. The Alter Rebbe also quotes it, I think, towards the end of Hilchas Ribis in Shulchan Aruch here today. Okay, major issue, right? What do you do? What do you do? Zogdi Rogichov. He says to her, borrow empty vessels. Okay. You borrow empty vessels? She borrowed empty vessels. Fantastic. Now she has the empty vessels. And he makes this whole, whatever he does, he said it should be in private, and that's what it says. It says that Nissim, the reason why he says to her to shut the door behind you and behind your children, is because in order for the blessing to be bestowed and the miracle to happen, etc., has to be done. Bitznius, etc., it shouldn't be in an obvious fashion. That's the way Hashem makes miracles, performs miracles. Okay. What occurs when the oil start pouring in? Says the Rogatchover. There's a Tosfos in Masechta Tanis Daf Ches Amud Beis. And Tosfos in Masechta Tanis Daf Ches Amud Beis brings to our attention a Gemara in Chulin Daf Kufhei Omud Aleph. Kufhei Omud Beis. Kufhei. In Kufhei, the story goes as follows. What's the story? The story is there are these two delivery men who are delivering a barrel of wine. And they need to rest as they're carrying it. And what do? They end up resting by placing, they're carrying it in the street, in the Rosh Hasharabim, in the public domain, and they need to rest. What do? They place it beneath the rooftop, someone's rooftop, beneath a public building, in the public street, right? Underneath the...
Marzeva.
The drain pipe. The draining pipe.
Where the shade in.
Wonderful. As he places it there, all of a sudden... Psh, It pops, it splits down the middle, and all splats, and all the wine goes, shoo! What happens? They end up finding out, what's the story? That there's the shindalit, Tosfos says in Tainis that there was a shindalit, a shed, a ghost, a spirit, right, who caused it to plots, to cause it to split. So what do? These fellows send a hazmonoladin to this ghost, to this shindalit, that he should come to the Bezdin, to Mar Baravashi's Bezdin. So he sends them a hazmona ledin. He sends them. They're invited to come to the bezdin that he has to pay for the. They caused the loss. Yeah, there's big damage. Pay the damages. So Marbar, they comes. Okay, they set a time. Whatever. He says, "What's going on here? The guy. What's going on? You want us to pay? Why should the ghost say? Ghost says, why should I pay? The guy takes the barrel and puts it down on my ear." They needed to rest in the street, right? So what do? They take the barrel of wine, they put it down, it looked like it was empty, right? It so happened to be that there was a spirit there, there was a ghost there, and they don't see it, of course, these two guys, the delivery men, they put it down on right over there, and it happens to be, says the shindale, they put it down on my ear. So what should I do? I should let him sit on my ear? So I just whacked it off of me. So why should I pay? They put it down on my ear. So Mavra Ravashi says, listen, but you're sitting in a public domain. It's public property. So you have the full right to put it down. And therefore, you're chayav to pay damages. No worries. You set a time, you come to the bezin, you come and pay up, you pay up what you're owing. Anyway, they didn't come, they come late. So Maharaj says, what did you come late for? The shindala, he says, the ghost comes, the spirit comes late. So he says, you know why I came late? Because the fact is, the only way we're able to rip people off, the shindala, the ghost, to affect anybody's property, to take hold of anybody's property is only if it is sealed and counted and numbered, etc. Okay, and it's not and only if it is hefker, only something which is onerous. And we didn't get a chance. We had an opportunity to find something just like that. So therefore, I came late, and that's the end of the story. So Tosfos says, "Look, Tosfos, basically has a problem. There's a contradiction between this Gemara and Mesichta Tanis. The Gemara in Tanis says that Ein Abrocha Mitzuya Ela B'Dover Asomu Min Ha'Oin. Hashem's blessings are only bestowed on something which is not counted and not numbered, and people don't know what's going on, and it's in the hiding and in secret and in private. And privately, Hashem bestows His blessings on people's properties and people's granaries, etc., etc., etc. Yeah. Says the Gemara here, the Gemara says clearly, right? So that's, we see a bruch is bestowed there, where it's somewhere, but if it's numbered or counted or evaluated, and people know what its value is and what it's, how many, what it's worth and what it's valued, so there's no blessing. And here it's clearly from the Gemara that the Shindalit says that we were trying to get a hold of something which is numbered. What am I saying? So what's the stira? So what's the kasha?
The Eivishter wants it.
Okay, let me just conclude. So the Deiker, the Maskana, the Maskana. Tosfos says that the Deiker is Azoi. The issue is Hefka, right? In other words, the Shin Dalit can only get a hold of something which is free for all. Okay? So Hashem's blessing comes in private only. Okay? In other words, if something's numbered, there's no way there can be blessing there, right? So that's what they meant to say. We can only take hold of something which is free for all. And if something is free for all, can only be when the blessing of Hashem is bestowed in private, right? And that's only then is Hashem's blessing bestowed. B'meila, therefore, and Tosfos says, when the Hashem's blessing comes in, right, to someone's granary or whatever, someone's area, right, it is kimoy hefker. It is like it's free for all. And there's no owner, it's ownerless. And only that's what the Shin Dalit meant. In other words, Hashem, the Shin Dalit mainly meant, in the case of Chulin, they meant basically to highlight that we're looking for something ownerless. And therefore, why? Because only something which is ownerless can we come into the picture. Because if there's an owner, we can't have any shlita there. So therefore, when the Gemara says in Tainis, So that's the gist of what Tosfos says, right? Tosfos says that when there's the bracha of Hashem and there's an abundance in someone's granary or in his property, etc., etc., all of that remains like hefker, okay? And the Shin Dalit says, therefore, whatever. But that's the key of what Tosfos says. That's basically what we're taking out of the Tosfos. It's like hefker. Now, we'll soon come to see why it's like hefker. Now, if it is like hefker, right? Right? In other words, you didn't acquire it, you didn't buy it, Hashem bestows His blessing. So even though it's coming into your area, it's coming into yours, right? It's a blessing in your granary, it's a blessing in your keli, it's a blessing in your vessels. Nevertheless, it says Tosfos, it's like hefker. You don't acquire it. And the Shin Dalit, the ghost, the spirit, can rip it off before you acquire it. Okay? And that's the hold He has over you, because He may become aware of it before you become aware of it. Ended. So the Rogachover says, if that's the case, when there's the blessing of the oil, there's the abundance of the oil, all the oil is coming in there, right? That oil is like hefker. Hefker. Tosfos says it's hefker. Right? Ownerless. Ownerless. Now, if it would have been her own Caleb, here we go. If it would have been, the Rogachover doesn't say this, but we have to say it, and so it's obvious. If it would have been her own vessels, right? Her own property, right? So then let it be like Tosfos. Tosfos really says it's like Hefker. Now the Sfasemis says, what do you mean it's like Hefker? If someone Hashem bestows His blessing on someone's property, right? And he has a small amount of grain, all of a sudden it quadruples, the grain quadruples in his granary, whatever, yeah? So what is it, like Hefker? Definitely says the Sfasemis, if someone, no one has right to take it from him. And if someone takes it from him, it's like Gezel, definitely like stealing. There's no question about it. It's partial that way. Nevertheless, Tosfos says it's kimoy hefker. So what's the pshat kimoy hefker? So in the Shailas HaTshuvos Beis Yitzchok from Rabbi Yitzchok Shmelkish, who is the Elter Zayde of Nat Lewin. No, now we feel at home? Okay. Good. Nat Lewin?
It's been here.
Good. All right. So Rabbi Yitzchok Shmelkish in Shailas HaTshuvos Beis Yitzchok Erechaim Simen Kufiud, he brings the Tosfos and he says, what's going on? And what does Tosfos say? It's like Hefker. Well, the truth is Tosfos says it's like Hefker. He doesn't say it's Mamash Hefker. So maybe Tosfos is only saying it in relation to the ghost, to the Shindalit, right? But nevertheless, and it seems from the Ritz of Hashem is that it can't be Hefker. But Rabbi Yitzchak Shmulkish says an interesting thing. He taka learns that it's hefker. Why? The rule is generally that there is a din of kinyan chotzer, right? If something, a lost object, is found in your backyard, so even though you didn't actually pick it up yourself to acquire it, nevertheless, your property or your vessel or your area, right, if it belongs to you, so that acquires it on your behalf. That's called kinyan chotzer. The Gemara queries exactly what the criteria of kinyan chotzer is. Is it liyad or is it shlichas? Whatever it is. But there's a concept of chotzer that your yard, your courtyard, or whatever, can acquire something on your behalf. So what does Tosfos say that if there is a blessing and Hashem bestows His blessing on something which is your in your area, you're not, it's like owner. What is like ownerless? Watch with the king and chotzer, asks Rabbi Yitzchak Shmulkish. And he says as follows. He says the rule is, now others want to say, for instance, Rabbi Reuven Margolis, pardon?
Kinyan chotzer only works when you have in dust that it should work.
Oh, so Rabbi Reuven Margolis says, he says he has a take on it, and it's like, let's just stick to Rabbi Shmulkish. He says as follows. He says, by something, the din is that chotzer, if it's a chotzer hamishtameretz, if it's a guarded chotzer, it works even if you don't know that it's there. If it's an unguarded chotzer, if it's an open area, even though it belongs to you, so then you have to be there and be aware that it came, the lost owner, the lost object came into your property, and then you acquire it. But if it's a chotzer hamishtameres, it's a watch protected area fenced in, and some lost object is found there, it belongs to you. But when is that? Only by things which are normal cases. Something unusual, you have to be aware that it's there, and only then do you acquire it. Okay? And this is based on a Tosfos of Masechta Baba Basra. Daf Nun Dalet, if I recall correctly. So Bemele says, Rabbi Yitzchak Shmulkish, that's why Tosfos says it's Kumay Hefker. Because this Indian, that there should be blessing, right? An abundance of the granary, that quadruples and whatever, right? That Hashem gives blessing. It's not a usual expectation. It's not a usual thing for one to expect. So he has to be aware that so occurred, that there was blessing there. And in order for that, so only then do you acquire it. Otherwise, you won't acquire it if you're not aware of it. Because it's an unusual occurrence. In other words, if you find something just dropped in there, someone lost a wallet there, and you're off the street, or a ball from the next year, someone's ball fell into your backyard, fine, you'll acquire it, let's say, right? If there's no one claiming it. But if it's something which is an unusual occurrence, like the case where bracha comes from heaven, right? Hocus pocus. So that thing is unusual, and you have to be aware that it's happening. And for you to be aware that it's happening, only then do you acquire it. Otherwise, you don't acquire it. That's what they say. It's Kumay Hefker. End it. So the Melech, let's go back to this Eshes Avadya. Eshes Avadya, if it would have been her own vessels, right? She would have acquired it because she was expecting it. Okay? She was expecting it, the Pashta, so therefore she would have acquired it. He tells her, borrow vessels. So the vessels don't belong to you, they're borrowed. Okay? Now, once that oil comes into those vessels, who does it belong to? It doesn't belong to Eshes Avadya. Why? That's a Psak Aloch in Choshe Mishpat, in Simen Shin Yud Gimel. If someone rents out of property to you renting from someone, right? And there is a lost object found, or an object found in this property, right? So even though there's a halach of kinyan chotzer, right? And you're renting the property, and something was found on that property. Who does it belong to? So the halach is that it doesn't belong to the soicher, to the renter. It belongs to the owner. That's the din. Okay. The same applies by borrowing. That's the case of what we're talking about, borrowing. It doesn't belong to the borrower, it belongs to the owner. Okay. Now, in this case, it doesn't belong, to Eshes Avadya, right? She's borrowing the vessels. So the oil is coming in there, and their oil is coming now into the borrowed vessels. It doesn't belong to her, right? It should, according to the halacha, belong to the owner, right? To those who lent her the vessels. Says Rabbi Yitzchak Shmulkish in Yerideya, Simon Peidalet, and he quotes the Tshuva of Erechaim Simon Kofiut, and he says, no, the lender doesn't either acquire it. Because, he says as follows, It goes this way. He says the reason why the socher doesn't acquire it, the borrower doesn't acquire it, is because when I lend you something, I lend you with the intention for you to make use of it, but not to acquire lost objects. So that the initial owner is the lender, right, or the renter, the one who's renting it out. So therefore it's posher that it doesn't belong to the socher or to the shoyer. Okay? Why doesn't it belong to the fellow who lent it out? He says because... if I recall correctly, he says, because he never expected such a thing to happen. And because he never expected such a thing to happen, like we said originally, right? Yeah, so therefore, he has to be aware of it to happen, to warn it, to warn his vessel to acquire it. So therefore, he also doesn't acquire it. So what does it remain hefker? So the oil in these borrowed vessels, so we need borrowed vessels. Right? We need, this is all to explain the Rogachover. Yes. He doesn't say it, but I believe we need all of that, and I believe the Rogachover understood it that way. Well, he doesn't explain himself, but that's, it follows very well. Excuse me, one moment. That's the only thing which follows. So it's borrowed vessels, not her vessels, and it's borrowed vessels, and the oil she doesn't acquire, right? Eshes Avadah doesn't acquire it, you remain Hefker, and nor do the owners of these vessels acquire it, right? It remains like ownerless. What do we have to gain if it remains ownerless? Says the Rogachover, I can pay the creditor ribis. When is there a prohibition to pay for the loiver, for the borrower to pay the lender ribis? Is when he is noshich you. He's coming to take money from you, right? But if you manipulated things, right? And he ends up taking money from Hefka, right? He frees you, right? But he takes nothing off of me. He ends up getting his money back, his ribis back, his interest back. Let it be via me, but it's not my money. He's got ownerless money. He ends up winning the lottery, right? And he's happy. So what's the difference? What's the problem? And he brings out the sefta, pardon?
But he's not entitled to it.
What do you mean he's not entitled to
the ribis?
What do you mean he's not entitled? What do you mean he charged him? Of course he's not entitled to ribis. Why isn't he entitled to ribis?
It's against halacha, so how is he...
Well, that's a... Well, you charge your ribis, you only have to pay him. He didn't make a heteris.
I know he didn't, but what
he did an isur, but nevertheless, you have to pay him. If you charge, you have to pay him. I'm not passing halachas, but I understand some. If you charge, you have to pay him. That was her problem. He has to pay back the ribis. You have to pay back the debt. The initial debt she was able to pay back. She couldn't pay back the ribis. How do you pay back the ribis? He did the wrong thing. But we have to pay back in order not to transgress. How do we pay back without transgression? That's our problem. So if I maneuver it in such a way that she ends up the creditor ends up getting his money via the hefka, what's the problem? And he brings a tesefta. Everything has to be with Torah. And there's a mefurash tesefta in Baba Metzia. That it was such a situation where someone lent someone with ribis, and he ends up giving him back a contract which was all linked up with ribis, but it's not coming from the borrower, or it's not coming from directly from the borrower, and comes up from the tesefta. That is okay. So based on the Tesefta and B'Sechta Bava Metzia, Perikei, it's perfect, and therefore it works out here too. So he ends up getting back his money via what? Via the Hefker. So therefore there's no Shiloh of Ribis, and the debt is repaid. And then the Rogachover says, now says the Rogachover, now we appreciate why we have to borrow Caleb. And then he says to her, V'hamole tasi'i. Says, so the Rashi said, It was to explain. You can move the other vessels, but don't move the spring, the source, right? The Rogachover says no. The stress is not on the mole. The stress is in Vahamole Tasi. He says to her, listen, be careful. Be very careful. He says, you know, don't raise it up. Just move it. Push it. Push it aside. Why? It's a Mefurash Gemara in Baba Basra. And a Yerushalmi in Baba Kama. And the Yerushalmi in Kedushin. The din is as follows. That the Chosim She'en Lehem Achrayis, Metaltalin, or Nikne B'Meshicha. You can acquire them by drawing them into your property, right? So if there's something, there's a seller and a buyer, so the buyer, right, draws it into his property, but that he is koina, right? That's called Meshicha. Or B'Loshon HaYerushalmi, Gerera, schlepping it, dragging it, okay? The Gemara says Mefurish. This all applies by things which are generally not raised. And the Babli, the Yerushalmi says, it says in Babli too, the Barashman explains, if it's a dover kovet, it's a very heavy thing. And if it's heavy, like heavy skins or whatever it may be, heavy leather, right? It's hard to raise up. So then we say by dragging it, with that you're kind of metallically movable objects. But if it's a movable object which is generally raised up, and it's raisable, it's only you're able to raise it, it's not a heavy object. So the halacha is you're only kind of bahagbo, you're only kind of acquired by raising it up and not by schlepping it or dragging it. Mashiach is not kind of that, even though generally Mashiach is kind of by metaltalin. So there's a king in Mashiach or hagbo, and the only way you're kind of generally you would be. So light objects, right? Lightweight objects, you're kind of bahagbo, because that's the normal way of doing it. In other words, how does he express ownership? That he's ownership, that he's boss, that it's in his, he raises it up and it's his, right? But a thing which is unusual to do it because it's too hard to raise up. So therefore you can drag it or schlep it or pull it. Okay. The Mele says the Rogachover, he warns her. I don't want you to acquire it. I want this oil to remain ownerless. Therefore he says you should know when the oil is filled, Bahamole Tasi. You have to make sure just to push it aside. Because if you're gonna raise it up and bring it into your kitchen, or whatever it may be, with that you have acquired it. Because these are normal objects, new movable objects that you generally raise up, and then you would have acquired it. So Dafka, by pushing it, you're not koine, says the Gemara, because you would have to use the Hagbah. And Mashiach is not koine by lightweight objects. That's why he says, just push it, don't raise it. So the kvetch is tasi, push it. Okay. And then the Rabbi Chavar says another word. He says that there was another problem of Osalihonis Mimaisanissim. That was another problem. He says, Elisha had this additional problem, not just the problem of paying back the debt. Once he did this, Ingen, there was a problem of being Nehenem Mimaisanissim, right? How can you derive benefit from something which came about via a miracle, right? So therefore, he says, this takes care of the problems too. Because it remains Hefker. It's not you deriving benefit. If you had acquired it, so the Rav Chaver says, this that he doesn't want HS Evadi to acquire it is number one because of the problem of Ribis. Number two also because if she does acquire it, it becomes hers. So she then pays up her debt. She will be Nehenem Imaisenissim. She would be deriving benefit from something which occurred via a miracle. That can't be. So therefore it has to remain ownerless. So then even though the guy is taken care of, but it's not you taking care of her. So you're not using the Ness. And therefore he ends up saying, at the end, it says, Va'at uvonaych tichyi banoysor. So everybody taiches banoysor means with the leftover oil. There was so much oil, you paid up the creditors, so you have enough oil to keep you till tchias amesim, Rashi says. Yeah? So the first should explain why it says tchias amesim. So the Rosh Hashanah says, you know what banoysor means? Banoysor means, with that cruse of oil only. That's what banoyser means. The leftover means what the initial spring, the initial source, the osoch shemen, only that. Because osu lehonis b'maisenissen. In other words, even though there were oils, if there were oils left, she wasn't allowed to use it for her own personal. Because osu lehonis b'maisenissen. So the Rogat Shover teaches, that's what he teaches. Banoyser means, not, you can look at all the beforshim you like. They all say whatever. But the Rogat Shover learns banoyser means dafka with that amount, but any additional amount you can't be derived benefit from, because osu lehonism. Let me just continue, please. It's late, because the rabbi's in and we got to daven. I just want to conclude that it's quite obvious from the Rogat Shover l'chore, that he says that there's a problem of right? The Taz said and brought basis from here. That what there's a problem, it had to be done in such a manner in order there shouldn't be a problem of being prohibited to derive benefit from a miracle. That's why it had to happen in such a way, because otherwise there's a shail of Mamashki Yisrael. The Rogat Shover teaches this whole parasha that there is a problem of Neholos Mamashkiyisim. That's why it had to remain ownerless. So does the Rogat Shover disagree with his analysis or not? Possibly yes. Okay. In other words, the Rogat Shover basically bases it on a Mefurashi Gemara. The Gemara says in Masechta Tanis that there was a case where a fellow went out and he had to buy some prepare for his daughter's wedding, and he had a couple of bucks, and his style was that whenever the Gaboi Tzedakah saw that he's coming around, they ran away from him because he would run after them and make sure to give away all his money to them. So he runs after the Gaboi Tzedakah to the Kubishal Tzedakah, and he asks him, "What are you raising money for now?" He says, "Because we have to marry your orphan we have to marry orphans. He gave away all his money. He was raising money. He had a couple of bucks in his hand to buy food for his daughter's wedding. Understand? He gave it all away to this garbage doctor because they had to marry off orphans. He's left with a penny, 2 cents. He goes, what is he able to buy? He's able to buy one grain of wheat. He buys one grain of wheat. He comes home, nebuch, penniless, empty handed. What does he do? He throws it into the granary. He goes to shul to learn, to yeshiva to learn. The mother asks the daughter, so what dad bring home for your wedding? She says, take a look at the granary. It's full. It's full to the degree that it's pushing off and breaking off the hinges from the door. So she's running to her father and says, to shul, and says, ah, look what Hashem, who loves you, did for you. Yeah? That from the one thing, look what happened. So you know what he says to her? It's consecrated, you can't touch it. It's tzedakah, it's set aside to tzedakah, because it's a miracle. And on that, Rashi says, you're not allowed to derive any derived benefit from miracles. Now, so the Rogachev proves from there, look, there was already something physical in this world. There's one grain. And that grain was blessed, and we filled the granary, and there's abundance of grain. Says the Rogachev, there's an issur of lehonis memaisinism. The same should apply with the oil, even if you have some physical oil left. So the Rogachev bases his analysis that there's a problem of lehonis memaisinism from this Mefurashi Gemara. Now, other Mefurashim go out of their way to explain in a different manner that there shouldn't be a problem. I just want to conclude that okay, let me go because the gap is there. Just one vort. The Rogachev also learns that he warned her. That's what he says. You should. It says, what does it say in the pasuk? It says, he says, take the source of oil. Rashi says it worked, that it served as a spring, as a source, and it was flowing like a mayon. The Rogachev says, no way. If it was like a mayon, so then there is a nitzuk. There is a connection, the column of oil, right? There's then a column of oil which is connecting the vessels, the borrowed vessels, and her vessels. So there's a column of oil which is connected, right? So the halacha is in Mesichta Avodah Zarah Daf Ayin Beis, and Sapsak halacha and Rambam Bilchus Macholos Asuris, that nitzuk chibur, that the column connects, even though when it comes to Tumah and Tara doesn't connect, but in Hilchas Yayin Esav, the rule is that the column, the pour, when you're pouring, so the column connects the top keli with the bottom keli. Therefore, if the guy in the bottom has Yayin Esav, right? It makes not just the column, the wine in the column prohibited, it even prohibits the wine left in the top keli, whatever left. So to that degree, it connects. B'meila, says the Rogachev, it can't be that it was served in such a way that it connected, because if it connected, then she would have acquired the oil. You understand? Because if the oil is connected in the borrowed kelim, so those, all that oil ends up becoming hers, because it's connected to hers. So he had to just tell her to sprinkle. Basically, the Rogachev says it didn't come as a spring, as a well. It came from Avir. From just out of the
no, what is it?
Yes, Yeshmiyah, it came. No, in other words, Hashem says there has to be something physical, but the physical didn't actually work as a source. It came from just out of the blue, so to speak, from the avir, right? There was something there, and Hashem made that it should come from the avir, but it just likes to sprinkle. That he requotes the boss. If he got sucked, I'll call a kalim. It doesn't mean to say you should have it pouring, so to speak, sprinkle, or nothing more than that. Because if there's a column, it'll connect. Take it easy. Good Chanukah. Good morning.
So you can claim this king still claim the money from her because it wasn't their
English. Of course not. What are you talking about? How could he got his money?
He got his money, but not from her.
It's not his business. Yeah.